Hey guys, it's Matthew and Melissa. We are in Shawnee National Forest on our first big trip. We're about 6 hours from home and wanted to say great job. Thanks for the podcast. It really gave us inspiration to not be afraid to take that first trip so many hours away from home. We're having a great time. It's sunny and 75, well, you know, near 30 at home. You know, we're longtime tent campers. We have four kids and really outgrew it and decided to get our first trailer. Our last trip to the Smoky Mountains was an awesome trip. The kids had a great time with the Junior Ranger program. And that was a nice balance between nature and Dollywood. The kids just absolutely had a blast at Dollywood too. So it was good on and off for them and kept them entertained and engaged. Just wanted to let you know that we thought your podcast was great. We as tent campers can't call this camping. Although it's very awesome, we think it's we haven't decided, but either traveling or adventuring. And when I say we, Melissa has nothing to do with it. It's all me. I'm crazy. I have to call it something other than camping. Well, that's it. Keep trekking on, and see you on the trails.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we write about RV and family travel with our three boys, Theo, Max, and Wes.
You can read about our adventures at RVFamilyTravelAtlas.com, and you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
On this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas, we are diving into the 2015 North American Camping Report. This survey, sponsored by Campgrounds of America, was released last week and offers an interesting and sometimes surprising look at who's camping, where they are camping, and what gadgets and gear they are bringing along for the ride.
And we are also sharing our listeners' spring camping resolutions. Last week, on episode 27, we talked about our resolutions for the upcoming camping season. Well, your goals came flooding in soon after, and we can't wait to read and talk about all your great plans for 2015.
All of this and so much more on episode 28 of RV Family Travel Atlas. Meet the new American camper.
So last night, as I was about to go to bed, I decided to check my email one last time.
Of course you did.
Of course I did. That sort of pre-bedtime email check, just to make sure nothing exciting was happening. And we received a really nice email with a voice message attached to it.
A first.
An absolute first. And I thought, well, I have to listen to this.
Yeah.
And at that point, it was late and everyone was asleep. So I grabbed my earphones, plugged them in, and listened to a really lovely message from Matthew and Melissa, which we just heard at the beginning of the podcast. And it was a lovely message, but it was also so interesting because apparently Matthew struggles with the definition of camping, or he can't call it camping now that he's in an RV.
This before,
and we joke
right?
about that all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, for one, you know, like your father used to always say, oh, you guys aren't, what you
We're
do,
not
that's
camping.
Not camping. Yeah. What I did was camping. That's not camping.
And that's the thing with people that grow up tent camping. When you get into an RV,
they feel like they go all soft,
right?
Or something.
The words camping don't want to come
they
out
can't
of their.
Say
it's like, oh, I don't want to say that.
But the timing was so interesting.
We don't care because we don't care about camping. We're doing what we're doing. We say RVing a lot.
Call it what you want to call it. Just go and do it.
Who cares?
But it was interesting timing because for tonight's featured topic, we're going to be diving into the North American Camping Report, which is sponsored by KOA and is just this really interesting document about the culture of camping in America right now.
I have to say, our listeners do this a lot. Like, we're always like getting the right content at the right time, I feel like, from our listeners. Like, they'll give us a good email.
It's the spiritual connection we have with our listenership.
Well, no, it's the time of year and the season, I think. I think that
we're all thinking the same thing.
Yes. I think that RVers are on that same general
there's clock. A wavelength.
Yeah. We're all thinking about the same things, whether it's organizing or like, you know, safety and on the road or planning or so it's cool. But
this,
anyway,
this
that was
camping
fun.
Report, one of the things they make clear is that they have a very defined definition of what camping is because they wanted to ask everybody this, you know, using the same terminology, I guess. And maybe in the past that hadn't happened and they wanted to be clear. This is what we mean by camping. You know, please answer our questions about it.
Yeah. We're all assuming that this word means this when we talk and then answer the question. So it was a great voicemail. And actually, we had heard from them, I think, I guess, over the weekend, or they had posted to our Facebook page.
We got like a nice family selfie on the way to
their first
Great Smoky Mountains on their first RV trip.
That's so exciting.
Yeah, that's very exciting. Mm-hmm. And everyone looked very excited in the picture, including the dogs.
Kids and dogs. And so anyway, we just wanted to remind all of our listeners that we did open up the posting on our Facebook page, and we love it because everybody's sending in their pictures.
I'm so glad you decided to do that. It was just one of our kind of cranky hangups, I guess,
about social media. You know,
yeah, but
like
then all of a sudden, it's so nice
spam.
To see these pictures of our listeners out there camping and having fun.
Yep.
So when we start our feature topic in a minute, we'll share that definition of camping, okay? But there's a couple other things we wanted to talk about before we head into tonight's feature topic. We also wanted to remind everyone to sign up for our newsletter.
Oh, right, on our website. So especially as we get out on the road and everything and we're doing like our posts of our traveling season, everything, it's really nice. We usually do sort of a conceptual like theme for the newsletter for the week and then put in links to anything that's interesting or special from the week or blog posts that we've done. So make sure you put in your email address on our website and you'll get our weekly newsletter. Also,
big announcement.
What is our big announcement? I just wanted to tell people to hashtag RVFTI on Instagram. Because we had some people start to do that. And for us, we want just to start reposting.
Yeah, I want to take off some of the grand psychic pressure that I have to put up a new picture every day because I want to share some of your pictures. So we've been regramming a little bit more from people who listen to the show.
Yeah.
And we would encourage you to hashtag RVFTA. And if it's a great picture, we'll throw
camping
it up.
Camping pictures. Yeah, we want to see where you are.
Yeah, camping pictures.
Yeah. don't hashtag
not
your kids
the kids at T-ball or something. It's all nice.
No. Hashtag any of your travel photos and make sure you tell us where you are so that we know where, because that's what ends up happening is we always ask people, where are you? Where are you camping? Where are you staying?
Well, it's fascinating to see to see where people are camping.
Yeah, everybody wants to know. Okay. So then also big announcement.
Big announcement.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're really excited about our trip that is coming up soon. We are taking our first big trip this year to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
And we went to Myrtle Beach last year
our
first big trip. And we loved Myrtle Beach.
It.
We heart Myrtle Beach.
Oh, my gosh. We were so impressed.
And it took
impressed.
Me by surprise.
Oh, yeah.
I have to be honest. I was not expecting to fall in love with Myrtle.
Oh, I dragged you there.
A little bit of dragging.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't thinking it would be this amazing destination. Mm-hmm. And it ended up, like, it's kind of RV heaven.
Yeah, well, a lot of people say that. And if you drive up and down that main road, and I can't even remember what it is right now.
The Grand Strand?
Okay, so, well, I meant the real name of it.
Hey, don't drive on the Grand Strand. That's the boardwalk.
If you drive up and down the road, there's campground after campground, and also RV dealership after RV dealership.
Yeah, it was really surprising.
Yeah.
So we stayed at the Myrtle Beach KOA last year. Mm-hmm. We were customers of the Myrtle Beach KOA, and we loved it, and the boys loved it. And out of the 20 or so KOAs that we have stayed at, I would put this like in our top three.
I was so impressed. It was like the fact that we were just a block or so from the beach, but yet there were trees everywhere.
You would
had
never
this really
know.
Wooded quality to it.
It's such a unique spot.
Yeah, most of the time beach camping means really being like exposed.
Out
it's
in
sort
the
of
open.
Almost like parking lot kind of a feel to it, and you do that because
but
you're beach
you
camping.
You can walk to the beach from this campground, yet you feel like you're kind of tucked away in a secret forest miles away from all the hustle and bustle, but the hustle and bustle is right outside the campground.
Heated pool, blah, blah, blah. We'll talk more
we'll
about
the
camp.
We'll be talking more. Yeah. So anyway, this year it's a sponsored trip by KOA.
Yeah, so we're so excited. So KOA is sending us back. We want it to go back. And KOA is sending us back, and we're going to be doing some writing for them.
Right. So some of these posts will be hopefully going up on their Facebook page.
Yeah. So, and then also, we're going to have like fancy pantsy media badges.
Yeah, the city of Myrtle Beach is hosting us.
They're calling us media, and I love it.
Yeah,
right?
So Stephanie landed some big media passes to Myrtle Beach, which means we kind of have like the keys to the kingdom, and we get to try out just about anything we want to try out.
We did a lot last year that we loved. But of course, going back, we want to basically do like every single thing we possibly can so we can recommend the best of the best.
Yeah, we want sort of a comprehensive list of what you should be doing.
Really, what are the good things? And
if we don't like it, we're not going to going to recommend
it. We never do. We never do. That's what I always say. We promote what we love. So we have like these badges and we're just going to like prance up and down.
Right.
The avenue.
Zip lining.
We are going to do
mini golf.
I'm excited. It's going
to
be a fun vacation.
Yeah. So we'll have a lot of cool stuff to share. And I think we should say too, on these sponsored trips, no one is asking us to write any particular thing.
Right.
No
right.
one is paying us for this. We're just getting
and
access
we play
to
it,
go.
We play it safe with this kind of stuff too, because we know we love Myrtle Beach and we know we love that KOA.
Yeah.
We
we've already raved about that campground and we have written about that campground. And we were customers of the campground, so we, you know, we asked to go to this campground and really are excited to return.
So this is, we're gearing up. This is big, and we're happy to do it.
Yeah, we got to pack this week.
And it's
going
to be our first on the road podcast.
Yeah, we'll see how that works.
So, hey. Folks, stay
tuned. Maybe we'll record it around the crackling campfire.
No, everybody would be like, that's awful sound. Stop.
Yeah. You might actually hear the children screaming in the background for once.
The camper door will be banging.
We've successfully locked them in the closet for the first 28 episodes, but we might not be able to do that anymore.
All three are in the bathroom.
So listen, we'll be back in a second with our feature topic. And I think this is a really great feature topic. There's a lot of interesting information in this North American camping report. And we're going to break down about, you know, I think about 10 key elements that we found particularly interesting. So stay tuned.
So for our featured topic this week, we are talking about the North American Camping Report, which it was a survey that was conducted by the Cairn Consulting Group, and it's sponsored by Campgrounds of America. So they just released this last week, and so it was all over Twitter and Facebook
and
everything.
Hot off the press, yeah. And a lot of media outlets picked it up and kind of did their own articles on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of those articles really just kind of focused on one or two key points.
Yeah.
So
we
wanted to take you deeper. Into the North American Camping Report than the mainstream media.
Or at least we just wanted to talk about the things that interested us.
Right.
Which is basically what we did.
It's really pretty fascinating, you know, and it's kind of interesting even that KOA releases this report. And I think part of that is like, hey, we want to be the market leader here. You know,
right.
We want to be the one leading the way.
Well, and we want to be the ones with our finger on the pulse.
Of what's happening.
Of American camping. I think that has a lot to do with it.
Well, and it's so interesting. This is like a public document.
Mm-hmm.
There's like part of me that thinks, you know, why wouldn't this be some document they keep to themselves? You know, all this great information. But any campground owner can grab a copy of this. It's online. And it's pretty interesting. And there's some parts of it are very interesting.
I think that some things are like, well, duh.
Right, sure.
It's all over the place.
There are some real surprises.
Right. And this is what I noticed. Well, first of all, if you don't know where this is, okay, let me tell you where it is online. Because if you're listening to this, like in your living room, whatever, you might want to flip through this online as we talk about it, just because it might
help. Listen, I highly encourage you to grab your iPad or grab your laptop and actually pull this report up, and we will identify the pages we are talking about as we go through. It. So if you want to see the pie charts and the graphs and the statistics and have the visual, that might really help you enjoy this segment.
So this was done by KOA, sponsored by KOA. So they have it as an Uber flip, but the link is a little complicated. It's like, you know, KOA.com/, like, then there's like 11 numbers. .uberflip or something. So I can't just tell it to you. That wouldn't be easy. But what I thought we'd do is if you go to our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/RV Family Travel Atlas. We'll pin the link to this to the top of our Facebook page.
And we're not trying to manipulate you to go to our Facebook page. We're not trying to do that at all.
All right. So then you can just go there and click on it and it'll come right up.
Right.
Okay.
So we're going to get like all scholarly here, aren't we?
Yeah,
like, I feel like we're back in graduate school or something.
We like just having like, pie charts
and
everything.
Those,
like,
those marketing people at KOA, they're all like all smart and whatnot with their pie charts and their graphs.
We're smart too. Well, anyway, you know, we put a link to this up last night or the night before, and we were saying like, oh, we're going to be talking about this on the podcast. And it was interesting that some of the comments from people were already pointing in the direction that we were going in when we were reading this. And we were like, you know what? there were some things that we felt were counterintuitive to what we would have thought. And I'll tell you, I thought about it for like 5 minutes and I realized why that was. Because we're all RV crazy. Like if you're listening to this podcast, if you're like,
we don't represent the average person answering these questions. We're traveling a lot more.
Yeah. So you have to remember that. And everything we're talking about, this is all about the average, right? They were doing this broad survey to talk about how camping is across the population in America.
Right.
We represent a smaller segment that camps frequently.
And they go out of their way at one point in the survey to explain that their sample really does represent the population.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is a pretty serious survey.
Yeah, this is not a survey of like serious RVers like
that. This isn't like the kind of survey like we would do. Hey, what do you think?
Yeah, we survey each other at the campground.
8 out of 10 RVFDA listeners think.
Right. All right. So anyway, let's get going and let's talk about, first off, we were...
What types of trips are people taking?
Yes, but
and
wait,
Paige,
wait, wait.
Yes.
What types of trips are campers taking, but we have
to define camping.
Is, and we already said that.
And I think it's interesting that they went out of their way to define camping. And I think it's a useful definition. And obviously this report is also meant for industry people and campground owners. But go ahead. What is their definition of camping?
So they said any occasion when you spend at least one night outside of your primary residence and stayed in accommodation such as tent, trailer, RV, vehicle, or cabin cottage at a campground.
Yeah, so they have to define their terms, and that works for me.
Exactly. Well, it's basically how we define it. It really is, because we say it doesn't matter what you're staying in, a cabin, a tent, or
an RV. Boondocking or camping out in the wild doesn't apply to this definition.
It's not a campground, but that's their point, is they're looking at campgrounds.
It's about businesses.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, but not just private. They talk about national parks and forests
but the,
and all
the,
that.
But the industry, the camping industry. Mm-hmm.
So
there's your definition.
That's camping. Right.
And Matthew, we hope you're cool with that. Okay.
You're gonna have to be okay with that.
And all of our other listeners too. If you take issue with that definition, drop us a line.
Or send us a voice email.
Send us a voice email if you want to. That'd be cool. So on page 6, we're going to go to page 6. I mean, this is a long report and there's no way we're going to hit everything, but we wanted to hit some, you know, what we thought are highlights. Mm-hmm. So on page 6, they talk about what types of trips are people taking. Mm-hmm. And what does the average American's camping trip look like?
Right.
So what did they discover here about what types of trips people are taking and what trends?
Well, this is one of those things I think that did surprise us. And I think our comments on our Facebook pointed to this also. So this said that a majority of campers are destination campers. Now, what does that mean? It means you're going with your RV or tent or whatever to one place, and you're sort of using that campground and that camping destination to like explore an area.
Yeah. So the trend is that people are staying longer versus more frequent trips, to quote the report.
In other words, not what we do.
Yeah. We go, you know, we stay in one place for 3 or 4 days and we move on and we hop around.
And we might explore one region. Like if we're visiting Vermont.
But that's not how most Americans are traveling.
But we'll go to a few different areas of that.
Now, this was surprising to me somewhat, because it seemed like all the talk 3 or 4 years ago was about how Americans are pinched for vacation time and they're taking a lot of short trips and regional trips. And so it feels like things are maybe moving in a different direction where people are taking longer trips again.
I feel like that could be one way you could look at it. And then I also started to think about it in a different way. I started to think, well, they say that more Americans are viewing campgrounds as like valid places to stay on a vacation
for your family vacation.
Yes, yes.
Right.
So that whereas people would have normally said, oh, we stay in a hotel or we rent a house or something.
Our big family trip is hotel, house, and then we might go camping once or twice a year.
Yeah, I feel like more families say, hey, do we want to rent a cabin? Like it's just becoming,
do we want to rent an RV?
Right. It's like becoming a little more, I don't know, just mainstream.
Yeah,
the idea
and honestly, you know, perhaps the camping industry or the campground industry is reaping the rewards of investing in cabins and investing in, you know, you can rent airstreams.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, they've not just KOA, but everyone's been kind of moving in that direction. And what I've heard elsewhere is there's really good profit
Right.
Okay. More so than renting an RV site. Mm-hmm. There's more profit built into renting a cabin.
Right.
But then conversely, the American family, if they decide to take their 7-day big family vacation to a campground, they're going to save money as opposed to a hotel.
Right.
They're going to save money as opposed to a cruise.
Yeah. And they're also going to get, we always argue, they're also going to get a lot of the activities that you would normally have at more of a resorty kind of a place.
Yeah, the American campground looks different than it did 20 or 30 years ago, and it's much more welcoming to people who are not necessarily as rugged in terms of what they want with camping.
Yeah.
And I'm good with that. You know,
I think
if it gets people outside and it gets people spending time with their families, who cares if the accommodations are a little bit more swanky or luxurious than a previous generation's camping accommodations?
Now, the next biggest group was the weekend traveler taking several weekend trips.
Yeah, it's not that far apart. No. So 55% of people say they travel to a single destination and stay there for several days. Mm-hmm. Then it's 47% of people say, I'm a weekend traveler taking
41.
Several
days. 41, honey, your eyesight's going.
Oh, it's small on my iPad. My eyesight is not going. I have like 20/20 vision.
He needs bifocals.
But she's right. And I'm going to blow it up here. I'm going to double check you. It's 41%.
He's gonna use his
technology. Okay, but still, I think my point's still valid. It's not that far apart.
No, but those are the two big chunks. And then I thought it was interesting, first of all, that we're not a big chunk. Like it said, like go to destination, staying for a few nights. That's a smaller population.
22%. Now, look, we have to be honest here. We're both teachers and we have the summer off. Yeah. We're able to take a 16-day RV trip and go to four spots.
Yeah, we travel differently than most people do.
And those are decisions that we made. You know,
but we also look for opportunities to write about different places, because that's why we travel differently too.
True.
We're looking for more campground
reviews. If we weren't
looking
to be doing reviews and looking to write about this industry, I would probably be much more inclined to stay at one place.
No, it's just kind of part and parcel with what we do.
Yeah, there's work hopping around.
But you know what I really found interesting about this chart?
Tell me.
Is that, okay, look at the ones that are like minute, right?
I am a full-time RVer.
Snowbirds are full-time RVer, 1%, right?
1%.
Seasonals, 3%, okay?
Right.
So these are such small pieces of this. But yet, so many people that find our podcast are like, I couldn't find information for us. We're family
you
campers.
You are pointing out something really great. So you're saying...
So much of the media about
a lot of
RV.
The media is generated by full-time travelers.
Yes.
And yet they're a very small percentage
or
of the population.
Or like retired
That's
people
a great
who
point.
Traveling always in there. Yeah. And I'm like, you know, look at this chart.
Right.
Most people are using their RVs to go on family vacations or to go to destination vacations. So,
but
you know
But the content's
what?
Being generated by people who are out there living in their RVs. So, and look, I have to be honest. That's part of why I wanted to start blogging and writing about, you know, all these things. Because I felt like it was filling a little bit of a hole.
We saw that as a niche. We were like,
the family
hello.
Traveler.
Yeah.
Right.
So I found that graph. That pointed me in that direction in my thinking.
That is very interesting. Shall we move on?
Well,
so we're going to go to page 7. Okay. And this is a map of the United States, and it says residents who camp at least occasionally, and it gives percentages of people who camp occasionally in different sections of the
region.
In the major regions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they have Canada, they have the American West, the Midwest, the South, and the Northeast. So, dear listener, which region do you think camps the least frequently?
It's ours, of course.
Of course,
right?
It's the Northeast.
All the time, the Northeast.
So,
we're the
but it's
lowest.
Still, look, it's still 52% of people in the Northeast.
The lowest in the United States.
Right. And then the highest, what's interesting is it's a tie between the American West and Canada at 68%.
Yeah, and where is the majority of our listeners are in the West?
That's been a constant surprise to us that there are so many
and
more people listening in California.
That has the highest rate.
Colorado.
So it was funny how many of these statistics kind of lined up with our experience.
But not just lined up with that. We did two RV shows this year. We presented seminars at an RV show in New Jersey and at an RV show in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And the culture of the RV shows was radically different.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the New Jersey RV show was kind of quieter and more staid and less busy.
Well,
and the Colorado
more
RV,
standardized,
more
too.
Standardized. Mm-hmm. The Colorado RV show was packed.
Yeah.
It was diverse.
Very diverse.
It was like a party.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see
– Beer.
Beer. You could see an enthusiasm for camping in that state that we don't have in New Jersey. And look, the reasons are obvious why. You don't need to belabor that point, why people might camp more in Colorado than in New Jersey. There are more campgrounds and more places to
More open spaces.
More open spaces, you know, where it's hard to
– But also a culture, you know, plays
getting
into
outdoors.
Outdoors culture, right.
So no surprises there. It just kind of confirmed what
funny.
We all kind of know.
We're here hanging out in the Northeast where they have the lowest rate of camping.
But let me say this. You know, to defend the Northeast, to me, New England is a major camping and RV destination, but the season's short because of the weather.
But it's a shorter
season, so there's a disadvantage in the Northeast because of the weather.
And also to give Northeasterners their, you know, rights.
Their props.
Their props. Okay. So they are actually quite outdoorsy in their own way. They do it in a different, in a very wintry sort of way where they're like snowshoeing and cross-country skiing.
Particularly
and
in New England.
It may not have to do with bringing a trailer out into the middle of nowhere and hunting or fishing or something like that. It's a little different up there. So we're not saying that they
and
don't
also
do activities.
Too, and I don't want to turn this into ragging on New Jersey or ragging on the Northeast, but you know, in the West, there just seems to be so many amazing state campgrounds and that's not present
it's not.
As, you know, as particularly in our state of New Jersey.
No,
you
it's
know,
not.
All those
and we
options.
Actually didn't put this down to talk about, but somewhere in this report, it was talking about the way people camp. And in the West, it was much higher.
Percentage of tent camping.
Yes.
Right.
And of state campgrounds and of national.
Right. We have more family-owned campgrounds.
Yes.
There's more state
In the Northeast, it was private campgrounds. People stayed there. And there's a reason for that. When people listen to our podcast and they're like, oh, they stayed at a lot of private campgrounds. There's a reason.
Right.
That is
those
what,
are the good campgrounds here.
Those are the good campgrounds. That's what is available to us here. So we use it. And when we get out west.
If there was a state campground on the beach here, you know, we'd be making reservations, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So let's move on. Let's go to page 8. And this was the most interesting and surprising part of this report.
Mm-hmm.
It took me by surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Camping by ethnicity.
Yeah, this was a big – I feel like this was like a big
– this was the shocker in here to me. And what's interesting is I read a bunch of the articles that came out in the mainstream media about this report. And they focused on things like, oh, campers want Wi-Fi almost as much
and
as
we'll
they
get
want toilet paper.
Yeah.
Because there's like a little punchline in that, I guess.
Easy.
But,
I think it's
but
easy.
But the shocker in here is about camping by ethnicity. So in their key findings, they talk about this, right?
Yeah. Do you want me to read
I think we should actually just read their bullet point on camping by ethnicity.
Right. Okay. So it says, over time, it appears that trends in camping among different ethnicities are beginning to align with overall population figures. Camping rates among non-whites have doubled from as recently as 2012, only 12%, to 2014, 23%.
Wait, that is really shocking.
Yeah.
So the number of minorities who are camping has doubled?
Yes, almost.
Almost.
Right.
We can round up a little.
Yeah.
Say it's doubled since 2012.
So we have had conversations about this.
Oh, yeah.
Between us, where we've talked about how we do feel the huge amount of diversity in one way on campgrounds. This
by
has been like
age,
private conversation
by
with
age
us.
And income.
Age and income. We've said, you know what? On campgrounds, it is so amazing that people with $500,000 rigs
parked right next to that $200 pop-up somebody bought off Craigslist.
Right.
And nobody blinks about it.
No, and nobody's like looking down their nose at anybody. Right?
It's
and
very democratic.
Everybody's interacting easily. And also, we've talked about the age diversity, how we love the fact that there's from newborns up through retirees at campgrounds, and everybody seems to be really enjoying each other's company. However, we've also
joked that campgrounds are white. They're
it's
very
like,
white.
Why is this the case, right?
Yeah.
Like why when especially we come from a very diverse area. We're from New Jersey. Like there's so many
and from
different,
a kind of diverse county and a diverse part of New Jersey.
Yeah, we're a suburb really of New York City in a lot of ways. And so we just live in a diverse area.
New Jersey
area.
Looks like America, baby.
So when we live in that kind of area and we go during the summer
We've kind of joked about it. Like, there's very little diversity with ethnicity that we've seen.
Well, it's not like, it's just kind of like, well, why is that? Why is it that something that seems like it could really transcend ethnicity in one way hasn't? Well, we find out from this report, and this is why it jumped out to us so much, because we find this to be really great news. Because what it's saying is that the the diversity on campgrounds is starting to represent the diversity
of
Americans'
population. But rapidly starting
to
represent.
Yeah.
And, you know, my question that I don't have an answer for is why is this happening so quickly and so rapidly in the last 4 years? And I can only come up with one thing, and I know this is just maybe a small part of the answer. You know, I have to give tremendous credit to the Go RVing media campaigns.
Yeah.
Those commercials have reached millions and millions of people. They play them during the Major League Baseball playoffs. You know, almost everyone that camps or RVs has seen those commercials.
Right.
Almost everyone in America has seen those commercials.
And they do.
They've
try
done a
to
great
place.
Job of portraying different types of people at campgrounds and different colors of people, different ethnicities at American campgrounds. And I'm wondering if that is at least part of the answer, because people are seeing themselves up on the screen or seeing people like them and saying, hey, why can't I go do that as
that
well?
That would fit my family also. Now, my question for you, because you're right. I've noticed that too. They do try to demonstrate diversity in their ad campaigns. What about their bloggers?
There's some.
I'd have to look through the list, but I'm thinking.
Yeah, you're putting me on the spot.
Okay,
about
I'm
that.
Just thinking about it. It's a question. It'd be something that I'm interested to go and to see.
Right.
And maybe that would be the next step.
But let's
that would
be fair
really...
to some degree. If they wanted a diverse group of bloggers in terms of ethnicity, that would probably be difficult to find.
Right, because there's
but
not
there's,
as many.
But there's one
many.
Other thing I want to say on this issue, and whatever else you want to say, please feel free. You know, people often kind of wax poetic about how the American campground represents the best of an older version of America, of 1950s America, where kids are playing on the streets and neighbors are chatting to neighbors. And, you know, I get wrapped up in that too, right? That campgrounds represent the best of, you know, what America used to be. But the negative flip side to that is, campgrounds
that's,
look like it's the 1950s in
not
some ways
the best
too.
Of what America
so
always
we were
has been.
Kind of like excited by this a little bit.
Yeah.
And also, look, it's good news for the industry. Okay, because minorities are not going to be in the minority forever, right? There's general shifts in our population. The campground industry has to welcome this news.
Right.
And also it says that a lot of – a good percentage of those people are Asian, did it not?
Yeah, right. So, well, they have a higher rate, right? Like based on percentage of population, the Asian culture does have a higher percentage – representation on campgrounds.
Yeah, and it was, you know, to get back to all those media articles, maybe I'm wrong, but nobody touched this.
Yeah.
It's like the mainstream media did not want to talk about this in their articles. They went for the cutesy, fluffy stuff.
Yeah.
But here at RV Family Travel Atlas, this is hard hitting.
Right. No,
okay?
I think it's important. And I think just like we say, part of what we want to do is we want to say this is such a valid way for all families, no matter shape, size, anything.
Income, whatever.
Yes. Like this is a valid way to experience our country. And this fits into that
for us. To experience our country and to experience your own family.
It's important
the best of your own family. Yeah, absolutely. And also, look, I'm not bragging on RVFTA, but I think we have noticed we have kind of a diverse listenership in terms of ethnicity, in terms of who's posting on our Facebook page and who's listening.
Right.
So,
yeah. Well,
at least
and
I think
I hope
we do.
That can just go hand in hand with the fact that this is saying that campgrounds are becoming more diverse.
Maybe
and that's
we should do a study of
important
our listenership.
Thing. Let's not do studies. We'll just read
studies.
Okay.
So anyway, to me, that was probably the key finding, but there's lots of other interesting stuff. So let's move on to the distance from home that people are willing to travel to camp. That's page 13 if you're following along, which we encourage you to do. So about how far are people willing to travel to go camping?
Yeah, well, this was interesting based on the fact that I just did a post this week on camping close to home, which we've never done. We are far travelers.
We have never camped less than 2 hours from home.
Right, except for last weekend. So, and I actually wrote a post about it. So, but on here, it's about half of campers travel less than 100 miles. Half.
Right.
And then half travel more than 100 miles. But almost everybody stays under 200.
Right. What is the percentage of people that stay under – okay, overall three-fourths, to quote the report, three-fourths of campers stay within 200 miles of their homes.
Miles.
Now, I like to think that there might be this resurgence going on in the grand American road trip, the cross-country road trip. Research is not backing –
Because
me up on
it's
that.
Not practical for
it's
most
not practical.
People.
But,
it doesn't
but that
work.
Does, it makes me nostalgic for, you know, a time period in American life when people really were taking these huge trips.
Yeah, maybe.
So how does this bode for our national parks of the West that are not near population centers?
Well, if you live in Utah and you have five national parks around
Utah,
you, no problem.
Utah is not a population center. I actually think I know that Utah is about the 33rd in terms of population size.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you for that.
But what I'm saying is, if most Americans are only willing to go about 200 miles, I don't know. What does that say about the future of our national parks, about Yellowstone, about Glacier, places where most people are very, very far away?
Well, what it says is that a lot of people that are visiting them are not camping and RVing there.
Right.
They are flying into those regions.
And day tripping.
And day tripping to all of the places in those regions. So it's not that these places aren't getting visitors.
No, I think the visitorship's gone up.
It's just that people aren't going to the campgrounds.
Well, and the national parks know they have an issue here, that they're not drawing the next generation of RVer to the campground.
Well, that's because we look different.
Well, also, you can't fit in your RV if it's
over
30 feet.
That's what I'm saying. We look different.
And there's no full hookups.
RVs look different.
So I really have is that our national parks modernize their campgrounds, and then maybe we would see these numbers go up in terms of the distance people were willing to travel for an RV
trip. If they could stay in a nice campground in the national park, I bet that would be true. So,
let's go to page 15, and we want to talk about
– Oh, this is – and I already said this.
Go ahead.
I did bring it up a little bit. Okay, so I'm going to read this, right? Because it's
the
regional differences and how people camp. Remember earlier I was like, oh, I know it was in here somewhere, but I forgot that we had it down on the list to talk about. Okay, so it says campers from Western U.S. represent a different type of camping behavior, with campers from this region much more likely to camp in tents, 73%, and least likely to camp in a campground cabin, 11%.
Too soft for those rugged Westerners.
You don't need no cabins.
Get a cabin with linens.
They are also substantially more likely to camp in national or state parks. 45% of this is group camper, like group camping nights, okay, which was interesting. So more groups camp in the West.
Are you sure
know?
That's what it's saying? It says 45% of this group's camper nights.
Oh, that was another one that I was looking at, I guess. Okay.
Who's losing their eyesight, Darren?
No. There was another thing about group camping being the main introduction somewhere in this report, and I had found that interesting too. Okay. So compared to campers from the Midwest or Northeast who are most likely to camp at private campgrounds.
Softies.
Yeah. All right. So that's just the bottom line. Like, that is a difference in the way.
And we have had listeners write in to the Facebook page and say, oh, you know.
You're funny. You guys.
Well, camping to us is so different. We're in state parks. You know, you guys are in all these places with all these amenities and everything.
And we're like, yes.
The way we camp is defined by what our regions offer.
Yes.
To some degree or another, to a large degree.
And let me tell you something. When we're going through a lot of those Western states, our lists for those Western states are going to have tons
of state parks.
State and
national
parks.
Absolutely.
On them. Yeah.
I mean, I wish we had more options in that neighborhood. I've said that already. So let's go to page 18. And this is about what campers value most in the campground. I don't know that there's surprises here, but it's interesting nonetheless. So what do campers value the most? And we have talked about this on this show.
Okay. This bar on this graph is so much longer than
more than
all
twice
of the
size
others,
of any
right?
other one.
Because 50% said clean and well-maintained bathrooms or restrooms.
And campground owners out there, you got to know this already. But when you go to TripAdvisor, when you go to read reviews, it's the first thing people criticize and it's the first thing people praise.
Yes.
Which, you know, I'm a little disconnected from that because we use our RV bathroom.
But when we had our pop-up, it was the first thing I thought of with a campground.
But it's like almost like symbolic. And you know what my grandfather used to say to me when I was a kid? If a restaurant has clean bathrooms, it probably means that everything else is going to be good too.
Your grandfather used to say it means the kitchen's clean. That's what he
So it's almost like a symbol where you walk into a clean bathroom and your perception of the entire campground is that it's clean. You walk into a messy bathroom and it shifts your entire perception of the whole campground, fairly or unfairly, I think.
So the other, it was basic and then kid friendly.
Well, then everything clumps together, by
and
the way.
And free Wi-Fi. Yeah. Like,
right.
I mean, then
20%,
after that,
19%, 19%.
Right. And it's breaking down along the, and there's nothing in this top except for safety lighting that we haven't talked about as being important in like our tips for campground.
Yeah, where is safety lighting?
Safety lighting is 17%.
What percentage of people care about safety lighting?
My gosh, 17%. And I'm telling you, safety lighting annoys the
living daylights out of me. Yeah, Stephanie doesn't like those big lights at the campgrounds.
I hate it if I wind up in a campsite where I have like a big spotlight. light shining down.
Yeah, but
nearby.
At the same time, we're going to campgrounds with where big RVs are pulling in late at night, and they need to be able to see. So I get the irritation. But at the same time, you know, the campground owners have to be concerned about people being able to drive around.
All right. So that wraps up our
first half. We're going to look at five more key findings, and we're going to get into technology and some other kind of controversial, interesting things as well. So we'll be back in a second.
Okay, so for our second half of our featured topic on the 2015 North American Camping Report, we want to start off with the big hot topic that all the media news outlets were picking up on.
Yeah, everyone focused on technology.
Yeah.
I mm-hmm. guess for good reason.
Because it is a topic that comes up right now a lot. Because why? We're in a transition phase right
Historically.
Now. Historically. Historically, right.
The grand forces of history are changing.
Yeah. And I mean, it's such a difference of when my boys were born, right? I didn't have a smartphone for the first 2 years of their life. They're five now, and I can't imagine my life without my smartphone, okay?
Right.
It's just things are moving quickly. Things are changing a lot. And obviously, our campgrounds are changing to look like them because who's in campgrounds? We are, right? Like, that's where we're taking our vacation, okay?
And look, there's people that are quick to condemn the use of technology in a campground, that it should be more of this kind of pure experience with nature, and there shouldn't be technology involved. But then there's just the reality of how we live.
Okay, yeah. And I don't think it has to be something that you're like, oh, well, we have to use our technology. I think that you can thoughtfully consider your use of technology, and it can be a really great part of your travel experience, right?
So on page 19 of the study, they have a list of bullet points, and we wanted to talk about three of them. So the first bullet point states that nearly all campers, 83%, state that they bring their cell phones along with them when camping.
Yeah.
Surprise, surprise. I'm surprised the number's not higher.
Right. 83%. You're like, who doesn't have a cell phone, right? And I guess that maybe it's like the kids don't count or something. But here's the thing. Cell phones are not just cell phones anymore. There are little mini computers. And when I talk about using my cell phone when I travel on the campground, it's not
just... You're not making phone calls at all.
No, I'm not. And that's the funny
thing. And you're
part.
Not texting. I'm sure plenty of people are.
Not that much.
But
I mean, sometimes...
We're not texting.
But what I'm doing is I'm using it to make our traveling experience much more enjoyable.
It can enrich the travel experience.
I love the fact that I don't have to stress out about having all the information ahead of time. Like if I know general places that we're going to visit and I've looked, I can be looking at my cell phone in the morning to look at opening times or closing times or ticket prices.
And then pull up the phone number right there.
And then, GPS on my phone and let's go. It's all right there and it makes it this sort of seamless experience for me. It is not taking me away from my experience.
You're also disciplined with your device. You're not the normal person.
But that's
that
what
way.
I'm saying.
And we talked about that on last week's show.
You can use it mindfully. And it can really be a good
thing. It can enrich the trip if you use it correctly.
Absolutely. So I think
I need to say, a lot of people are not buying handheld cameras anymore.
Right.
That market's getting devastated by how good cell phone cameras
are.
I'm impressed by the pictures my new iPhone takes.
Holy moly.
It's incredible. And so a lot of people, that's their camera. That's replaced the camera in their pocket. And then, of course, they're sharing them on those pictures on social media. Media and everything. But when if you criticize someone for bringing their cell phone or always having their cell phone with them, what you're really saying is you shouldn't have your GPS, your computer, your camera with you and all those other things. For teenagers, their phone is their camera.
I keep my checklists on my phone in the notes section. Like I have lists of places we're going to visit. I do so much on my phone. It's almost like the old Filofax. Like my mom used to have her big old Filofax where it's like all of her phone numbers and everything.
This is a little sleeker and easier to carry around.
That's what it is.
So look, you're saying we just shouldn't automatically be criticizing this or automatically praising it. It always comes down to how you're using it.
It's a complicated topic. And it's like just a buzzword right now. Technology. Instead of people really thinking about what it means.
All right, so the second bullet. Access to free Wi-Fi ranks in the top three most important campground amenities before traditional amenities such as camp store or safety lighting.
Safety lighting.
So people care more about their Wi-Fi than about having a camp store.
Wow.
Let me tell you, Max and Theo need a camp store with ice cream.
Yeah. It's about 6:01 for us.
So there is this obsession in online reviews about kind of complaining about, oh, the Wi-Fi, yeah. they advertise Wi-Fi at this campground, but then it didn't work.
Yeah.
And look, we want Wi-Fi at a campground. We use Wi-Fi at a campground.
We use it.
But we also never get cranky or upset when it doesn't work because I just feel like it's like an impossible battle these campground owners are fighting.
Right. Well, first of all, it's a silly battle too because it's going to be over very soon. We're in a transitional period right now. Everybody uses their devices a lot. And they expect it no matter where we go. Everything's on there, right? Our movies are in the cloud. Everything's in the cloud. We want to bring things down, okay? And we need Wi-Fi to do it. Now, campgrounds have not upgraded to Wi-Fi. But the thing is they're struggling so much to do it, but that's silly. Because by the time they get around to trying to boost...
By the time they all really have great
we
signals...
We all are going to have our own hotspots.
Hey, with so many people we know now, it's become so affordable to travel with your own wireless hotspot. We just really feel like in a year or two that that's...
Everybody that's upgrading now with their phones or their iPads, everybody's doing the hotspot plan.
I can't count the number of campground owners we have seen running around, struggling to reset Wi-Fi signals, climbing trees, climbing up ladders, working on boosters. And I just feel like it's much ado about nothing. And if they just wait it out, the culture will change. And those campground owners should be doing other things.
I have two things to say about that. First of all, I have always said I feel that campground owners should at least have a plug-in for you to be able to
plug. For an emergency situation.
Not even emergency. Right. Just down in the camp store area in the lounge, let me plug into your internet. Okay, so your Wi-Fi doesn't work great, but if I have to pay a bill or if I have to go online and send a couple emails, let me come down, plug my computer in somewhere. Just have a little... outlet for me. Boop. Let me plug it
and
do it.
And that's easy to manage.
And that is easy to manage. And it wouldn't be a big deal. You could have a little time limit on or whatever. Just a little sign. Please as a courtesy. All right. That would be nice. Okay. Now, my second point on this is that people want good Wi-Fi, but it's not about the campgrounds. It's about the services that stop at the campground gate. And a lot of these campgrounds are in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
So
they're limited by
nature
itself.
Buy all of the boosters that they want it to.
Yeah.
And it's not the
look, we were at the Twin Mountain.
Signal doesn't get to them.
We were at the Twin Mountain KOA this summer at the top of the White Mountains in New Hampshire, which was in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
It was very remote.
Oh, yeah. There was no cell signal.
Which was charming. And we had to drive half an hour to get milk.
Yeah.
But we liked that. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the experience we wanted. And the poor owner... It seemed like he was spending his entire day messing around with Wi-Fi.
He rebooted that signal
over
so many
and
times.
Over and over and over.
And it's like...
And he was trying so hard.
Yeah. But if he had just had a really strong signal down at in the camp store or whatever...
Well, you were driving down there
I went down because we were doing some work. I think we were working for Jayco at the time. So we actually had to post some articles and everything. And that's fine because then we know what our limitations are and we find a solution.
Yeah, so everyone got so hyper-focused. And I think some campground owners are investing so much time and resources... Yeah. We think the culture is going to change so quickly anyway.
Yeah.
Right.
Just people need to just get over the fact that not all campgrounds can build an infrastructure for Wi-Fi. And you know what? Nor should they because we're all going to have hotspots by next year.
And
I
if
guarantee
it is so
it.
Important to you to have that strong Wi-Fi signal, you might need to spend $10 a month to get yourself your own hotspot.
It's fine. It's not that big of a deal anymore.
So the sixth bullet, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So I had to count there. Access to Wi-Fi while camping appears to be important for reasons other than simply checking email or staying connected. Considering 31% of campers who are online while camping are using social media, such as Facebook and Twitter, it appears that many campers are using social media to share their camping experiences during the experience versus waiting until they are home. So that is a fundamental shift.
But here's another thing that people get judgy about. They're like, oh, get off your Facebook.
Do we live in just a judgy culture?
Everybody's so judgy about everything, right? But here's what I have to say about that. Because I totally can get into a judgy mode about social media and people that are like posting on Facebook 25 times a day. But here's the thing. Have you ever sat through somebody's like slideshow of 200
that
pictures?
Somebody was named my dad.
After their vacation.
He used to do these really long slideshows anytime somebody came over.
His photography
was great and his music was great.
Yeah.
But you could, you know, like when you go over somebody's house, we don't like to do that.
Or their photo album. It's not that exciting. However, when you get one picture at a time from your friends who are traveling somewhere, it's really nice. I love it. Like if we have friends that go to Hawaii and their pictures kind of pop up in my feed a couple times a day. It makes me really happy. Like I love seeing where they are and in just one picture at a time. time.
Where if it's that old-fashioned slideshow, it's like, I get it. You had fun.
You had a great time in Hawaii, and it was really beautiful. But, like, it makes me happy over the course of a week to see pictures from Hawaii.
I think also the reality is just, like, this is a fundamental change in human beings. And for a lot of people, it enhances the pleasure they have on a trip to share a photo of them at the beach or on a mountaintop.
Yeah.
And that's not changing.
Yeah.
You know, we can criticize people all we want for that. But that's who we are as human beings right
and
now.
And another generation might say, well, we didn't do that. But you couldn't do that. You didn't have the technology. No, that's what I think a lot of the time. Like, parents are like, well, my kids didn't watch any, you know, TV. And well, it was, you had three channels.
Right.
And there was a log burning on your TV channel.
Or parents these days are on their cell phones at the playground where their kids play. They're not paying any attention to them. Okay, well, 50 years ago, you kicked them out onto the street and you told them to come back at dark. Okay? So you're right.
It's just everything's different.
Every generation has its positives and negatives.
We have to just say, this is what it is and how are we going to use it?
And that's what's interesting at looking at statistics like this is they kind of pull you back to reality and pull you away from subjective emotional judgments about how we behave.
Yeah.
Okay, right. so that's the role of technology.
That's our take on technology.
Now, on page 24, there are some, would you call those pie charts, honey?
Yeah, okay. They're pie charts.
I'm an English teacher.
There's no math.
I eat pie, but pie charts. This page is Tuttle, which the Bar Harbor KOA is the
best. Yes, okay, honey, we know.
Pie.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Squirrel.
Why people are camping and the impact and benefits. Now, again, there weren't surprises here, but it felt sort of reassuring that people are camping for the same reasons they've probably always been camping.
Yeah.
Despite all the radical changes with technology and all that, the fundamentals are the same.
Yeah. We talked a lot about the differences, right, in this generation. And then all of a sudden, it brings you
back to the commonalities.
What are people looking for on vacation? They are not looking for, like, amped up adrenaline fun a lot of the time. What they're looking for is time to relax and connect with their family and friends.
Right. So 55% said that camping allows me to reconnect with nature and the outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
54% said camping reduces stress and relaxes me. 49% camping allows me to spend more time with my family and friends.
Yeah.
That these pie charts could be from 50 years ago.
Yeah, it's the same. And it's the stuff we talked about. It was really interesting because it had me thinking about our episode on why we take family trips, like the family road trip one, like
what's
in it for the kids, what we feel like we're doing when we travel. And really, that's that pie.
The core
those pie
is
charts,
the same.
Right.
Yeah. And it's interesting,
what we think
too,
we're
providing
with our kids,
people don't
come
home from a vacation and say, man, the Wi-Fi was strong. You know,
they do say the clean bathroom.
So, you ask somebody, how was your vacation? You know, that Wi-Fi was cracking. You know,
that thing that goes around on Facebook. No kid ever remembers their best day at TV.
Yeah, it's like, it's funny. The things that people complain about in the moment are really not the things they care about as well. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of an interesting contrast there.
Yeah.
Okay. So now let's go to page 31 and 32. We're going to talk about planning and booking because we have some things to say about planning.
Of course we do because we plan and book a lot and we give people advice about planning and booking a lot.
Well, we actually, one of our seminars at the RV shows was part of it was about planning and
booking. Right, because we think that that's at the heart of a successful trip.
So let's talk about planning. When people are planning a trip, where do they turn to for information?
Okay. So 50% are on Google. And it's
just doing a Google search.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. And it is this wide open way for people to start to experience an area, right? You see what pops up. And I do that all the time. I just start looking around and poking around at what people are saying about an area. And it gives me like almost like a rooted sense. You know, it helps me kind of.
And you're seeing images.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And images really help me. It says family and friends.
47%.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. So word of mouth is still powerful.
Yeah. Web reviews from individuals or groups.
22%.
Are we a group? We're individuals in a group.
Something like
that. Right, we're web reviews.
22% use TripAdvisor.
Yeah, and we always say that that's a really great
place.
Now,
old media's taking a beating. Yeah. Okay, guidebooks, only 19% are using your Frommer's books, which is maybe why Google practically gave Frommer's back to Frommer's after they bought it. that was a weird deal. Only 17% use articles in magazines, newspaper, and other sources. And as a guy who loves print media, it's like a little bit sad.
You always get sad about that. Okay. You still use it because I got a living room piled up with print media.
Yeah, I like going back to print media for these
sources.
So all
of the big catalogs are low, right?
Trailer Life, Good Sam.
And we do recommend. We feel like people really benefit from using those hard copy catalogs. So we say, look, if you're serious in the winter about planning out your trips and looking at, you know, take a look at the catalogs. They can be helpful. Right. You know, so.
But it's not just that they can be helpful for me. It's something maybe a bit more poetic is that
dreaming.
When I'm dreaming,
yeah.
Serendipity. You know, finding a campground listing for a place you never thought about yeah. visiting. Mm-hmm. So I love to flip through
right.
the hard copy of the KOA catalog. I love flipping through the Good Sam Travel Guide because I see places I would never think to Google search
yeah.
for. Right? I mean, I know where I want to stay in Utah.
Now, let's talk about down all the way at the end of the list, travel-related apps. And we've talked about this.
3%.
The industry pushes apps in general, right? Everybody's pushing apps. And people want to write articles about apps and want to review apps. And we kind of like are like, apps, because they're really like undeveloped and unhelpful in a lot of
they're
ways.
But also, look, you only find what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So I use travel apps if I want a phone number or an
yep.
address. I don't use it. To have this kind of romantic
nope.
quest to find my next great vacation.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't browse around on apps looking for great places.
It is
to
a
stay.
Closed universe. Like
through
when you think
systems,
about
yeah.
the internet, like really opening up a million different pieces of information, apps really kind of narrow you down and,
yeah.
and funnel you into something. So that's just something. I mean, who knows? It might change. You know, next year, like we said, we're in a rapidly changing technology landscape.
Right.
Apps might look very different for the
they
travel world.
They might look
world.
Like magazines.
Right. And so it'll be interesting, but they don't right now, and we don't really use them. And look, other people don't
yeah,
either.
Now, that might also be because they're new. Okay. That might be a statistic that rises dramatically,
mm-hmm.
but we're not feeling it there.
Now, and
how
that
about
goes
booking?
Hand in hand with making the reservation.
And that's page 32,
so that's 32.
If you're following along at home. Okay. So how do campers make reservations? 53% call in advance.
They do.
And that's what we recommend.
Yes.
I don't care how much we're pushed in the direction of booking online.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we have a much better vacation
yep.
when we call ahead and talk to a human being about what our specific needs are for a site,
yep.
whether we want to be by the playground, whether we want to be by the river, whether we want to be by the camp store,
yeah.
you know, and an online booking system that they don't allow you to get that specific right now.
Oh no. And we'll continue to stress that to the people that listen to us, that read us, because we think your happiness at a campground does not always depend on the campground. Most of the time it depends on your site, right? And what you're
yeah,
looking
absolutely.
For.
Absolutely. The site,
so.
It's not a hotel. The sites can vary so widely
yep.
at campgrounds. And I also think that when you call and speak to a human being and chat a little bit, they are going to be more likely to put you on a nice site
yeah.
than when that online booking comes into their email system
and
you're disembodied.
You.
You're
yeah.
you're some words on a page.
You sound
you're not
like
a human being.
Conspiracy theorist.
No,
right.
I'm just saying, if I was sitting there assigning people sites, I would probably give the better site to somebody I sat there and chatted
right,
with for
right.
10 minutes.
Yeah, you feel now, invested in their vacation a little
now,
bit.
Now, 29% of people do use websites. So, and obviously, look, that's probably going to be a growing number.
Yeah.
But we recommend the good old-fashioned call in advance,
mm-hmm.
and that's what most Americans
look at the website,
are doing.
Look at the map. Be familiar with it when you call. Use the website,
right.
but then call
and
say,
nice,
how about this campsite? How about this one? Should
it's
we?
It's also
blah, blah,
nice
blah.
To
yeah.
sometimes make a point of contact with a campground owner or manager, so then when you show up, it's like, oh, yeah, I remember talking to you.
Yep.
You know, it just kind of
mm-hmm.
makes it more human and personal and warm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And low down on there, mobile phone apps. Sorry, yep.
Yeah, mobile uh-huh. phone apps. And look, again, that could be something that grows dramatically, but
yeah,
we're not totally convinced.
If they give me like the sort of Google Earth sort of campground views on a map, on an app at some point where I can hit on the site and it'll let me do a 360 view
and
of
look,
the
and
site,
look,
well, hey,
you know
then
what?
I'll start booking.
And honestly, it will probably get there
of
quickly.
Of course it will, but
I
it's
was,
not there
I went
yet.
To the Jayco website now and you can now do a 360
oh, yeah,
tour
that.
Of
mm-hmm.
all their RVs. So look,
it's gonna get
the
there.
System, well, those systems will get better, but I still think there are advantages to talking to a
yeah.
person. So look,
right.
that's our rundown of the North American
that's what we found interesting.
Camping report.
If we miss something that you are looking at
is there
now,
some
when
golden
you're like,
hey, chestnut in there that you found.
Didn't talk about this. Let us know.
One of our very funny readers took a look
oh,
at this
yeah.
and dropped
uh-huh.
a comment and said that what he found interesting was that the camper on the inside cover was using a French press.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So that apparently research is showing that the North American camper still loves his or her French press.
Well, we're having an impact.
Well, we used our French press last weekend, and that coffee, let me tell you, that coffee was good.
All right, we got to go, okay.
We'll be back in a second to wrap up episode 28 of RVFTA.
So we heard from so many of you after last week's episode about your camping resolutions for the coming up camping season of 2015. And we just wanted to share what was going on out there.
You guys got me all good and pumped up.
I know.
Well,
that was the thing, is that once you start reading everybody else's resolutions, you're like, oh yeah, I got to add that and I got to add that, right? So Debbie told us, I like the way she said it. She had more and less. Two categories. So she said she had more hiking, exploring, and doing nothing. And I totally agree. I had doing nothing, more relaxing, right, on my list too. And she said less complaining, spending money, worrying, and food waste.
Oh, food waste has been such an food waste is such an issue with our three boys right now.
It gets me so mad.
Hey, Debbie, if you want less complaining, you might need to do less hiking. Sorry, dear.
Not with our kids, at least. Don't hike with our kids.
Amanda wrote in and said, camping for the first time with my husband, two children, and a dog. Yeah. You go, girl. Mm-hmm. Get out on that first trip.
And then Mary Catherine said her resolution is to sell the fifth wheel and get a pop-up so we can explore the Gila National Forest without killing ourselves.
I guess that driving that fifth wheel through the forest doesn't go so well.
We talked about that, okay. Too. Yeah.
Dan wrote in and said, fix the electrical issues in the trailer.
So practical.
And Dan is the man.
Yeah.
Backpacking, solo camping, visit a new high alpine campground, and go camping more.
So he wants to solo camp. You're not going to solo camp this year. I know that.
Yeah, probably not.
You have no idea.
Hey, Dan, good luck.
Yeah. And then Erin said she wants to unplug. She seconded you in that. Backpacking, learn to set up the tent on my own, more options for weekend getaways, and more photos. And she takes really good photos, so I'm interested in seeing more of them also.
And JP wrote in to say his resolutions. I think that my resolutions deal with moving more and more out of our comfort zone. The New Zealand trip was certainly a step in that direction, but we also want to do more nights in our RV. And we encourage you to do so. Okay, push it a little bit further. Everybody out there. Do some boondocking and already have reservations at a state park in Maine. And let me tell you, Maine has some beautiful state parks, JP. Mm-hmm. You're going to have a great time. And hey, write in and let us know what state park you're staying at. We're curious. Also, to go to places that we haven't been to before instead of going to places that we know about and enjoy, such as the Great Smoky Mountains. He's saying that's a place they haven't been
like
to
some
before.
People really like just keep getting drawn back to the places
and
that
JP,
they've been to.
And JP, we expect a full report on Great Smoky Mountains
because
we're heading there this summer.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, so we also had we also had people from Instagram chime in.
Oh,
right?
Our Instagram mm-hmm. people.
Yeah, and so Tiny Revolution said that they wanted to explore more national parks and also get better gas mileage.
Good luck with that. Some of those national parks pretty
far
away.
Well, the gas prices are lower this year. So, all right. So then we had three different followers on Instagram. In Town Campground, Jess Curran, and Rascal Rides all said they wanted to take the kids backpacking for the first time. And that got me like, oh, that sounds so amazing to like overnight backpacking, not like hiking, but like going out,
and we've
camping
always talked,
overnight.
We love the idea of say an RV trip to Wyoming, but then maybe away for a night of camping.
I don't know. Yeah. Somewhere
back
where there aren't
base.
Bears for my
so
first
So everybody
time.
That wrote in, let us know how your resolutions go. Okay.
All right. And then the last resolution, Nancy said that her resolution is to finally get that camper I've been searching for. And I think that we have a few listeners out there
the cusp.
That need to follow through on that resolution this year.
Yeah,
we have a
pull
lot
the trigger.
Of people. Yeah. And we want to see a picture.
Yeah.
We want to, I mean, hey, a voicemail.
Right.
Like, why not, right? Of your first
we might have
trailer.
To get one of those voicemail
I don't know. Items. We'll say, don't push me. We can only do so much at one time.